lot of books have been written about what went wrong with the various world empires throughout history. But if you don't have much time to read a lot of history, you might want to drop into the Helen Hayes Theater, where Colin Quinn manages to go from the caveman to the present in 75 minutes. Plus, as an added enticement, his one-man show called Appropriately Long Story Short is very, very funny. It is playing through January 8th, and I'm very happy that the former Saturday Night Live and Comedy Central star could join me today. Hello.
Hi.
Was this a long story short when you first wrote it?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually about three times the length that I ended up editing it down, that we edited it down to.
So what'd you have to cut out?
Just like long theories. I started getting – once you start thinking about anything, you know how it is. You just start thinking about everything, and I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense too. That seems, you know, I had all these elaborate things that were amusing to me, but I don't think they would have worked in that format.
Did it work that way when you were writing comedy bits? One thing just automatically leads to another, and then you have to edit yourself down?
Yeah, and that's the problem when you start comedy. I was so I used to ramble all the time and just, like, long-winded. And plus, I had been, you know, I felt like comedy, like, I tried to be, like, believe it or not, when I started stand-up comedy, I tried to make it, like, James Joyce style, like Ulysses, and I was always like trying to talk in stream of consciousness. I used to actually do that, and it was like it didn't really work that well.
Yeah, I can imagine audiences being a bit befuddled by that.
Yes,
but yes, what about were. You? You want to develop something because you really have a good idea, but at the same time, if you don't get a laugh every 30 seconds, there's something wrong, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly.
So you got to work the two things out.
Exactly, and that's really the.
Does that slow you down? The joke you need to get that joke in there.
Yeah, to a degree it does, but, you know, you get used to working, you know, I mean, it's a muscle like anything else. So, I mean, you get used to, like, saying, hey, I want a joke there, you know, and you're right, it's about 30 seconds before you start. And the other, which is bad and good, is comedians, after 30 seconds, you start to get a little like, uh-oh, they're going to get bored. I better pick up the, you know what I mean? And you want to get that joke. It's just it's ingrained in you, like, hey, I'm not doing well. I got to get it. So, but you don't want to do it at the expense of the topic either.
But this is different than stand-up. First of all, you can't come out and say, how you doing? Where are you from? You know, you actually have to. But
well,
the audience
show,
is also ready to go with you.
This is the one show you could say where you're from and then build an empire around that.
But the audience is coming in already prepared to go so, quite a bit with
you. Yes, exactly.
Before they're going to reject you.
That's right. Exactly. They're ready to listen, you know. A little clearer, and they're not as drunk as a average crowd. And you know, in a comedy club, it's like they're serving food while you're on, and they're, you know, different rounds of drinks. So it's kind of the crowd has to talk a little bit to the waitress.
And then there's always somebody drops some glasses, and that gets a bigger laugh than the comic.
Sure, because then you go, just put that anywhere, and everyone laughs at that.
Jerry Seinfeld directed this.
Yeah.
Has he directed other shows?
No, this is the first.
This is the first?
He just did it as a favor to me, but he ended up really loving doing it, you know.
So how long have you known each other?
I feel like he'll end up directing something else. That's my prediction. But we've known each other like 20-something years, you know, from the comedy clubs.
Did he actually realize what he was getting himself into when he signed on to direct?
No.
But I guess he thought, well, I'll just have Colin move from one side of the stage to the other, maybe sit down once in a while. That's what you usually get in these kinds of shows.
That's exactly right. But luckily his workaholism and his perfectionism kicked in, and he really started showing up all the time, you know? But he was planning to just do it in name only, but he just showed up all the time.
And what can he tell you to do? You're a pro.
I know, but this is, you know, when somebody else is watching you from the outside, they see things, you know, that if I'm just standing somewhere and I'm not doing anything, he'll be like, hey, you know, why don't you try, you know, just by the nature of when you're watching somebody do something, you start to get bored. So you're like, hey, why don't you move? And I'm getting bored. You represent the audience, you know, the director does.
So what happened when the two of you disagreed? It's hard to disagree with Jerry Seinfeld. Did you call in Larry David to arbitrate?
It really is. It is hard to disagree with a shot caller of Jerry's stature. But he takes it well, you know what I mean? Like, he's kind of like, he doesn't have an ego problem as far as, you know, if you disagree with him, it makes him mad like anybody else. But, I mean, he's just like, all right, you know, like, it's your show. He would say, it's your show, you know.
Mm-hmm. It's your show, your joke. It's your chance to fall on your face.
Right.
And but that's something that you that concerns you too. Although you've been working on this material for quite a while, it was off Broadway.
Yeah, off Broadway. That was, and then Jerry directed off Broadway too.
Had you done it even before then? Is this material that you've been thinking about for a while?
Yeah, I did a couple of the things a couple of years ago. I started doing. There's this one thing. It's like about a. It's sort of like a bar fight as the world now. You know how everyone's just like each country's involved in this bar fight, and I started doing it interestingly. I was doing shows in Iraq, like USO shows. So I started doing it over there, and they were laughing at it. That was like 5 years ago.
These almost. American GIs.
Yeah. So they were
not
laughing.
Not the Iraqis.
What's that? Not the Iraqis. And, yeah.
I'm trying to think of a stand-up bit in Baghdad right now.
Yeah, no. They,
that could be
you
difficult.
Know, well, it's a whole different culture as far as, you know, you say, you ever do this to a guy? And they're like, well, why would you let him get away with that, you know? Why would you stand for such? But, yeah, I'm sure the WikiLeaks will have like 30 – people have 30 minutes of material on that WikiLeaks. That's the only thing I miss doing a show is I like to be out there making WikiLeaks. You know, there's all kinds of material there.
Well, that is a concern when you're working with a script. This is really a scripted show at this point.
Yeah.
Can you adjust it at all? I know Carrie Fisher kept on changing her show.
Yeah.
But in your case, you're relying on – historical accuracy. You can't just suddenly...
No, you can't, but we did add like something about Ireland and Portugal, just a little line because of the economic collapse there. So you don't want to be unaware. So then people are like, hey, wait a minute, you're talking about only Greece being broke, but Ireland and Portugal are kind of broke now too. You know, like if things like that happen or something happens with North Korea or whatever, you want to be able to have the, you know, be able to put that in.
And you can get a joke out of the Eurozone?
Well, out of the what?
The Eurozone and the weakness of the euro at this moment?
Yeah, well, I mean, we do have sort of jokes like that, but not specifically Eurozone. But, I mean, we're going to have to put that in if it starts to collapse even more. And I just heard something today about the Ivory Coast.
Uh-huh.
Seems like there's problems there, but maybe that's...
No, it's true. The most recent elections have... I'm waiting for an election in any country or even New York. I just read today... That what was it? Something like 160,000 votes in New York were lost in the last election, and it didn't. It wouldn't have affected the outcomes, but still, that's an awful lot of votes. I'm waiting for an election where everybody says, you know, it was perfectly done and perfectly democratic, and we got the right answers, the right results.
Isn't it so crazy? Isn't it? But 160,000 didn't affect the election.
Well, you know, New York, everybody votes for the Democrat.
Right. I didn't. But, yeah, I'd like to see an election where things actually work correctly. But it is kind of charming that you still have to go down there and vote. Everything else you can do online, but you still have to go down and put on the shoes and get down there in the kind of rainy day and vote. I kind of like that.
The premise here is kind of that the rivalries between countries are reflect basic human nature. And countries and the people who live in the countries often have great similarities.
People who live in the countries have great – yeah.
That, there are certain national characteristics.
Exactly. These national characteristics and also that there's just human characteristics that everybody – every empire does the same thing even after it stops working just like we do as people. You know how they always say people dress the year they did their – you know, their best look or whatever. You know, like people keep doing the same thing like, you know, that they continue to do the same thing even after it stops working. And that's what every empire did.
Did this come from some kind of a light bulb moment?
No, it really didn't. It came from me just wanting to always do stuff like that, like do empire, do stuff about the global picture, you know, just big picture stuff and then make it all about comedy, you know. And I had just done a show the year before, but I only ran it a couple of weeks about the economy, about how we went from being like people that just worked when we first, let's say in the early 20th century, we worked with our hands. You had money in your hands. Everything was tangible. And by the end of the century, nothing was tangible. It wasn't even just, you know, paper. It was literally ideas and promises was financial transactions. So it was like I went – that show was a good show. It was funny. But so I went over each decade how we went in each way. But so that made me start thinking I want to do these bigger ideas.
And you're dealing with the rise and fall of empires. And the first one that usually comes to people's mind, the Roman Empire, but you cover a whole bunch of them. And even though they have their own unique characteristics, would you say that they all have certain things in common?
No, the only thing they have in common is that, I mean, I obviously make them all distinct because I wanted to, but the only thing they have in common is that we have all the qualities of all of them. That's the whole thing of the show, is that we're like the Costco of empire decline. We have to have every quality.
And we're on the verge of our own Mayan ruin.
Are we right.
Well, good for us. We should also point out that there's a set that reflects this and a huge, what would you call it, a widescreen TV?
Yeah, I don't know, projection screen. I mean, it's projections. Yeah, I wouldn't know what to call that.
But that illustrates what you're talking about. And
right.
And you get a fair number of laughs from what appears on the screen as well.
Yeah.
So that was written by you?
No. That's the set director and Jerry. That's not me, you know. The art director and Jerry did those.
So you were going to just do a monologue, and the art director and Jerry said, hey, how about adding this? That winds up becoming a very important part of the show.
It does, and it's funny you say, because it gets laughs. But meanwhile, when I'm up there, I always never think of those projections. So I'm sitting there like thinking I'm getting laughs. I'm like, oh, that line got a better laugh than I thought it would. And then I realize, the picture got a laugh. Drives me crazy.
Yeah, but of course the picture is integrated with what you're saying.
I know, but still, you know, as a stand-up, you're
in competition with your own show.
Yes, you're. Well put. I never looked at it that way, but that's a good point.
My guess is
I got to fight with somebody.
Yeah, well, nobody's ever really happy.
No.
Even when you're getting all the laughs you wanted to get.
Yeah.
Colin Quinn stars in Colin Quinn, Long Story Short, which is running now through January 8th at the Helen Hayes Theater at 240 West 44th Street, right next door to Sardi's. For ticket information, you go to our show page at WNYC.org. The Hollywood Reporter said that you specialize, quote, in a thinking man's spin on the ethnic joke.
Ah.
Do you agree with that?
Yes, I do, because I feel like one of the things that's been shoved aside is any, like I always say in society, what drives me crazy in comedy is we're supposed to celebrate diversity, but don't point out that people are different. Mm-hmm. And so that's always bugged me in stand-up, because I grew up in, you know, mixed in Brooklyn like yourself. And it's like, you know, we would point out people's ethnicities or whatever. It wasn't like, not everything is racist. Things are actual, you know what I mean?
But when we were kids, that's how we defined ourselves.
Exactly. So that's what I've been trying to do. And, you know, nowadays that's, you know, considered, and whoa, what are you doing? So this show is a good way to do that and just say, hey, guess what? It doesn't always have to be, you know.
On the other hand, you don't want to do things that are insulting to other groups. So you have to walk a fine line
here. Right. You have to insult every group equally, more or less. But, I mean, I feel that way about every group equally. So it's organic, you know.
So you have you deal with the rivalry between the British and the French, for example. And then there's Spain's envy of Britain and France, as though Britain and France were friends, which you just pointed out they've never been.
Right, they were lovers, and Spain had the envy for France, and Portugal really had the envy for Spain, because they were like, it's like Dallas-Fort Worth. I don't say that in the show, but you know, I've thought about that, I guess.
Lisbon is really,
yes.
Fort Worth. Really San Antonio, after all. There, you also talk about subtle differences between African countries. Americans tend to lump all African countries together.
Right. The difference between the French and the English and the German, you know, since Africa was kind of chopped up by Europe in 1880, you know, the old Berlin Conference. And so I took all the different, you know, the parts that were that the influence each culture has on those places.
I get the feeling that you're saying that there's little hope that we have changing at all, because we're so trapped in the archetypes.
Well, I mean, it's not just the archetypes. I feel like we're just trapped in human behavior, never changes. So whatever technological advances we've made, all these brilliant technological advances, but if you read the newspaper, it's like the Old Testament. The same violence, the same. Like if I watch a Shakespearean play, I'll be saying, oh, look at this doctor. He takes blood like that. That's so primitive. But a minute later, you're laughing because you're like, oh, I do that when I'm jealous, or I do that. So that's what I mean by.
Sure. Psychology remains the same.
Exactly.
Oog and Una were probably going through having the same kinds of fights that couples have today.
Exactly. It's amazing.
Do British people come up to you, or any foreigner for that matter, and tell you that you got things right or wrong for that
matter? I mean, a couple of people, a couple of British people and Australians, but it's like right after the show, they're running out. So they're like, hey, I'm Australian. They just kind of give you that mild threat. I'm Australian, but I liked it. Or, you know, And the Canadians, you know, I give them a kind of a hard time, and they're very passive. So they're just like, I'm Canadian. Yeah, we deserve it, you know.
What kind of research did you have to do for this? Were you a good history student?
I mean, I read a lot, you know, I do read a lot. I don't read a lot of history, but I read a lot of, you know, I read a lot of global type stuff, more nonfiction. But I mean, I know the basics of history, and it's sort of like taking the basics of history and then just thinking your way deeper into it. But when I did the little research I did do, and this is stuff that's not in the show, like, for instance, I did this whole thing about Rome being, you know, all these like construction kind of mob type thing, you know, and they were big on building, and they were big on building. But then I started researching a little bit, and I found out that one of the reasons the barbarians crashed through the walls on the Via, whatever, was Salaria or something, was because Rome had started using, part of the decline, to talk about it, similar, inferior materials to build. They used this opus mixum that was inferior thing, and it helped them crash through the barbarians at the gates. Literally, the gates were made of cheaper material in the last couple of hundred years. So it was really fast. That kind of stuff is fascinating.
I guess that's what happens in all cultures. First, you start off very proud of what you're building.
That's
and
right.
Then after a while, somebody's saying, you know, I can save myself
yes.
5 cents if I...
Yeah. Yeah.
It's terrible, isn't it?
It is sad.
Now, what's happened? This started off a much more modest project when you were off Broadway.
Yeah.
Has it changed much?
Like you said,
the Helen Hayes is not the biggest theater on Broadway, but it's still a much larger than an off-Broadway
show. Yeah,
theater.
And it's still 600. And I had been there before. I did this Irish Wake thing there. But it's beautiful. Well, we changed, like you said, the projections got bigger, the set got bigger, the lighting changed, the music changed a little bit, you know. So it was like, you know, it's just they made all that bigger because I couldn't get any, you know, it's still me, you know. So it's like, you know, and so that all that outside stuff got bigger. And like I said, more movement, you know, slightly more movement, but not that much more.
What about audiences? Are they different on Broadway? Because we tend to think of Broadway audiences as more likely to at least be partially filled with out-of-towners.
Yeah, I feel like they are a little bit, you know. But I mean, but there's been a lot of people from New York coming to this show for some reason.
But for some reason?
Yeah. But I mean, it's more New York than out of town. It's not like, you know, going to see Wicked or something, you know. It's not like I don't think it's the first show out of town would want to come see, you know. It's more of a New York show or sensibility in a way, you know. And it's not like a show you want to have matinee necessarily.
Were you the funniest kid in your class?
Well,
what school did you go to?
I went to PS 321, IS 88, and John Dewey High School, and Stony Brook University.
Are they rich, fertile material for?
I was considered funny. Yes, I was definitely a class clown in the sense that I was, you know, all comedians are ADD. And you don't really listen it was just, you know, the most comedians are the worst. Here's when I knew comedians are bad students, because I was like, boy, I was such a, like, bad, you know, like, they're just troublemaker. And then I found out Ellen DeGeneres dropped out of high school. And I was like, that's it, because she's a stand-up, you know. And I was like, that is the epitome, because she seems like a nice, like, she'd be on her best behavior in school. And even she was a dropout. Comedians just don't like school.
Big breakthrough for you when you were on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
I like saying SNL because that's what the crossword puzzle always asks.
I like SNL too. But yeah, well, first, my first break was I was on MTV, which I like to say also instead of music television networks. And
well, they don't do music anymore.
I know, yeah. Well, they called our show responsible for that, actually, because we were the first game show on there, you know. And then a few years later, SNL, which was, and then Comedy Central. So.
And SNL, you wound up doing Weekend Update, which is. A prominent role in that show.
Sure.
Because you came across as somebody who might actually have some kind of network respectability.
Some gravitas.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever had the network respectability. I was almost like, you know, but I was definitely somebody who was like, I loved you. I mean, I'm just always reading and, you know, I love, like I said, I love current events, as they used to call them back in the day.
and you're still
I don't even know what they call them now.
But you're still kind of dealing with that today.
Yeah,
well,
totally.
Now it's breaking news on the 24-hour.
That's right, breaking news.
The previous show was Colin Quinn. You always stick your name at the front. Colin Quinn and Irish Wake.
Yeah.
How important is the fact that you grew up in an Irish community, Irish-American?
Well, it wasn't really Irish. It was mixed. You know, it was Park Slope.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean.
Yeah, but that was a very Irish neighborhood.
It had a very
Pete
Irish.
Hamill and others.
So, right, exactly, yeah, you know. But it was very mixed. But, I mean, But I mean, that was sort of about my block, my family. It was like a really, it was good as far as, I feel like doing that play again because I feel like now with my new chops from doing all these other shows, like I feel like I could give it its, you know, it had some great moments and I really feel like I would love to do it again at some point. You know?
It isn't physically demanding to be out there straight 75 minutes?
A little bit. On Saturdays we have 3 shows, so that's kind of tough. Wow. But I mean, during the week, it's like, it's a little more demanding than stand-up. And stand-up is certainly not working in the Chilean coal mines.
Yeah. Well, at least you don't have guys yelling out nasty things as you did probably in some of the nightclubs.
Sure.
There's
always a drunk. We've only had one drunk this entire time.
Ticket information is on our show page at WNYC.org. Colin Quinn's show is called Long Story Short. It is directed by Jerry Seinfeld, and it runs through January 8th. And then you got to get a job?
Yeah. So then I got to do an honest day's work, unfortunately.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. Thanks, Lynn.